Yes, hello. Mental hospital? Yeah, hi. I wanted to see if I could reserve the family suite. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shit shows. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea. I am a total and complete shit show. I'm the captain of this hot mess of a ship, and I am currently taking a well-deserved break. And I just want to say that it feels like olden times, guys. Remember when I used to do my podcast on the floor of my closet next to my cat's litter box? Hunched over like Quasimodo? Like, I did that for like 2 years. Well, I'm standing in the closet again because my mic sounded all crackly. I have to send it in to get fixed. And then I just went to Target to buy a different mic. And I was getting it all set up. And then I realized that I need some sort of special cord for it. So here I am, standing in the closet, recording on my phone because I'm hoping that the acoustics will sound a little bit better. If I'm in a very small space, this closet is full of shit. So I'm literally just standing in the one little spot where there is to stand. True shit show fashion. So you guys are going to get to hear one of my favorite episodes ever. It's actually two episodes that I combined in one. So I interviewed four siblings. This was back in the early days. I guess it's not that early. It was like episode 70, but it seems like it was a long time ago. You are going to love this, to hear the perspectives of all four of them. I loved this conversation. Sam actually reached out to me recently to say hello and said something about maybe we could do a catch-up, a recap, a see where they are now. And I would absolutely love to do that. I reached back out to him. I haven't heard back, but I am going to follow up with him and hopefully we can make that happen in 2025. So yeah, so let's just get on with the damn show. But first, let's talk about why you still need to damn the Join Shit Show. Even though I'm on break, I'm not on break from the damn shit show. This is my online support community where I host four weekly Zoom support groups where you can connect with other fellow shit shows. Got some amazing healing going on in this community. This is where you can vent. This is where you can get advice. This is where you can cry. This is where you can laugh. This is where you can feel like you're not a weirdo because everybody else knows exactly how you feel. So see the link in the show notes to damn the Join Shit Show. Next, please give me a little follow on the Insta, on the TikTok, at Adult Child Pod. And last but not least, whatever you do, please, I'm serious. Could you please give me a 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify? Thank you. Love you all. Blood's thicker than the mud. It's a family affair. It's a family affair. It's a family affair. It's a family affair. Today, we have four siblings that all still talk to each other. What is this? This is crazy. Yeah, I've been observing beforehand, guys, and they've actually been like, they actually seem genuinely interested in one another. So this is quite a sight to see. So welcome. We're going to just call you the shit show family. Welcome.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So let's start oldest to youngest. Introduce yourselves.
My name's Joanne. I am the oldest.
Okay. Sam, I'm an adult child.
Hey, that would make me next. I am Matt. I'm definitely qualified for sure. So.
And I'm Katie. I'm the youngest and definitely an adult child of an alcoholic and a narcissistic mother.
Nice. Welcome. So how are you feeling about doing this?
Nervous.
I'm excited to tell our story, if I can be honest.
I hope other people can learn from it because, wow. We went through some stuff. I gotta say I'm hesitant to, like, I kind of, my life thing is just to let the past be in the past. So yay, we get to drag all this old crap up. So that's not something I'm looking forward to. But if it can help other people, then cool.
It can. And you know, the thing that I always say when we talk about the shit that happened to us, it's like it's not about bashing. It's about like understanding the causes and conditions that made us the way that we are, you know, and how we heal and learn. So the other thing that I say is that
this dysfunction does not just pop out of nowhere. I'm pretty right. confident that it did not begin with your mother or your father.
Right. Right.
So they're just a product of their own upbringings as well. So,
and I like that you said that, because you said, I've heard you say that before, generational.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, the thing, if I might add, I had a revelation, I don't know, a couple years ago, that I was like 10 years older than my mom and dad when they were going through this crap. And I'm like, I barely have my stuff together, you know? Imagine 10 years ago, I'm like, you know, it's like kind of, it's still harsh to go through, but you give them a little bit of a break. They had four kids living insanity and barely holding it all together. So
what do you know about your parents' upbringings? Let's start there. Do we know much?
I don't think so.
I do.
Yeah, you go ahead.
I don't know much about my dad's upbringing, to be honest. But my mom, you know, she was a magnificent singer. And so she was really idolized and put on a pedestal at a very, very young age for her singing abilities. And the nuns really just implored her musical ability to be number one in her life. No friends, you know, it was the primary reason for her living. And, you know, my grandmother bought into that. My uncles kind of, her two brothers kind of went to the wayside in the adoration of my mother. And so my mom didn't have, like, she was not encouraged to have friends. She was encouraged to be a diva. And I mean, granted, she was a magnificent singer, extremely talented, but led such a sheltered, closed life. And within that life, there was a lot of anger and disruption in that family. My grandparents, my uncles, my one uncle just revolted every chance he could get. There was alcoholism on both sides of the family, mainly my grandfather's on my mom's side. So it was just like a shit show. Now on my dad's side, you know, grandmother was the alcoholic. And so my grandfather was the total enabler. My paternal grandfather. So it's kind of interesting that my maternal grandparents did not drink, but the anger and the byproducts of being from alcoholic families came through with such anger and resentment and secularism to, you know, my grandmother found her refuge in my mother and putting all, you know, her costumes together, everything. And my grandfather worked his ass off and just was a belligerent, real jerk until later in life. He was just an angry, angry guy from his past life. So if anybody else wants to add.
Yeah, does anybody else have anything to add?
I was just going to add, I'm not going to add anything on the mom side, but the dad side, definitely son of an alcoholic mother. Grandfather was completely codependent. The other thing was, a couple things on my dad is that his name was, you know, Sam Jr. and they called him Bobby. Mm-hmm. And it's only recently within the last couple of months that I realized that that was just to distinguish him from his father. And it wasn't a big deal, but my mom made it like a huge deal, you know, why he was called Bobby. And it was just a nickname. And the irony is all four of us have nicknames. None of us like have a, you know, our name is our name. And my mother made a huge deal about it.
Like, and what would she say?
Well, she would.
Can I do it? I'll do it.
Yeah, do it, Matt.
Bobby. Because my grandmother had a distinctive like smoky voice. And she would say, Bobby. That's the way my mom would just make it sound like horrible. Bobby. Yeah.
She hated my grandmother.
Yeah.
Because my mother was Italian. My father was, you know, English, Irish, German. And they didn't want her to marry my dad. They wanted him to marry Dot, I think, Dorothy. So like there was clearly they didn't get along. They didn't like my mother. My mother didn't like them. And then I think there was some trauma that happened to my father as a young man. Correct me if I'm wrong, but something happened to him as a little boy that kind of shaped how he grew up. And I think between that and his mother's drinking, I think he started drinking as a younger adult to kind of escape it all.
Yep.
I think he was like a teenager from what I remember. I don't think he was a young boy. So he was in that like formative stage. And what my Kate's talking about is probably a homosexual something event happened with him in New Jersey. And you know, you gotta put yourself in the place back at that time. There was so much shame. And it was not acceptable. Like it's somewhat acceptable today, even though there's still problems with it today. So I think he lived with that. He was like confused for a long time. And there's been some question about, you know, what drives alcoholism. Shame's probably a pretty good one. And then the thing, Kate, if I can add real quick, I think dad was idolized too in his family. Like mom was put on a pedestal. Dad was like the smart kid and he was going to go places. And so there was this immense pressure on him to, you know, be the star. So some of that, that's all I got.
Can I ask how you were made aware of this traumatic incident that happened to your dad? Like, who did you hear this from?
I think it was our uncle. 20 years ago? Was it like 2002? We found out. Uncle Jim told us.
I think so. Yeah.
And I had asked our mother and she didn't dispute it. So I think our mother knew. Our father passed away in 2000, by the way. Mom stole it.
So let's start it here. At what point, and we'll go oldest to youngest, at what point did you realize that your family was not functional?
I could definitely say that it started when we lived in Plymouth Meeting. My dad would go for his reserves on the weekend, and he would also binge drink then. And he often would come home rip-roaring drunk. And
what do you mean go for his reserves?
Navy reserves. He was in the Navy. Oh, okay. Sorry. So he was doing his weekend duty. And I just remember him. I was in eighth grade in the marching band and he had to take me to practice and we had to pull over because he had a vomit and it just stunk. And about sixth, seventh grade, I realized I was 12, 13 years old, just the dysfunction in the family, just that. I was more aware because I was the oldest, 13, 14, of the fighting that was going on, 12 and 13, of the fights that would go on, and both physical and just yelling. So that's about, I was about 11, 11 or 12. I remember just more shit hitting the fan, so to speak.
Do you remember what they would fight about?
My mother hated the fact that my father drank. My father would, I never heard my father like, or maybe I blocked it out, but I don't remember him responding at the level intensity as my mother would. So, I know there was some physical altercations, but I was upstairs and they were downstairs and I could hear it. I never went downstairs. I was too afraid to go downstairs because my mother used to beat us as well. So I didn't want to get in the middle of any other physical altercations. So it's about when 1975.
Well, I don't remember any specific instances of that happening. But I also think that I've repressed a lot of the memories I've had of that whole time. Because thinking back, I think of the experience of traveling from Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania to Hawaii and back numerous times. It was probably 81 or so, 82, where I feel like we had it. We were done getting bounced around and being exposed to that dysfunction. You know, earlier on, there were times where I had to intervene. There was one time I was trying to wrestle a steak knife out of my mom's hands.
Yep.
My father was wrestling with her, she was trying to slice her wrist in the middle of the kitchen, in front of all us kids. And it was a physical fight. You know, I don't think it dawned on me at that point that this is not right. This is not normal, because that's all I had been exposed to up to that point. You know, now looking back, it's clearly dysfunctional and clearly,
I'd say,
yeah, clearly the basis for some of my misshapen ideals and values.
And we'll get into more of the details of what happened, but just for now. What about you, Matt? When did you realize that things were a little fucked up?
A lot of it's like mixing together. I don't remember the weekend drinking, but I know that when my dad would go away for his 2-week, reserve stint, the story goes that he would call every night, but then there would be one or two nights where he wouldn't call my mom. And he'd be like, it wasn't like, hey, I'm going to go have a couple of beers. It was like, I'm going to go get blackout friggin' drunk. That's the way my dad drank. So you figure that's once a year he would go away and to lose it alcoholic wise. But on the other side of that, I think we got to bring up this point. I don't know how far back, probably from the early beginning, and maybe you guys can fill in the details, but my mom wouldn't take us places. My dad did. Mm-hmm. Like, my dad took us to church and mom would stay home. Mm-hmm. And so that like continued all the way. We'll get into the Hawaii stuff, but we escaped my mother frequently because, so we'd like say this all alcoholic thing. There's a whole lot of that dysfunction coming from my mother. Like, this craziness, man. And she was not a participatory mother. And like, we went and did stuff with dad. That's so I remember that. Like, why is mom not here? You know, mom's at home. And think, you know, we'll get into like mom not going to any of our events, I'm sure. But think about that, everybody. That started way the hell back then. She just didn't even do anything with us. So anyway, over.
Well, being the youngest, I feel that it's been my whole life. My earliest memories, I'd say, were normal, happy, you know, Christmas and, you know, going to grandma's. But it is around that time, I was probably 4 or 5, where I don't ever remember my father's drinking, but I remember witnessing the fights and mom getting thrown into the wall at the bottom of the staircase when I was 5 or 6, the fight that Joanne's talking about. And I had a lot of alone time with my mother because I was the youngest. So the kid, everybody was off at school. So it would be she and I, and it was, you know, at that point, you know, 70s, stay at home mom, she cleaned the house, blah, blah, blah. We'd go out for lunch. Like, that seemed normal. Mm-hmm. But it really was when we started to get ready to move to Hawaii, and they went on some vacation to Hawaii because my dad was stationed there, went there. So they went there, I don't know, 76, 77, so I'm 5 or 6, they come back and then announce, hey, we're going to move. And we're like, what? So that begins the bouncing and the instability. And so, it was around then. And as soon as we landed, you figured out that it's not normal, but the fighting and my mother's isolation from my dad's side of the family that started right around the same time. She wanted nothing to do with them.
Okay. So your dad was stationed there, but I just want to make sure that I'm getting the story correctly. So, did he have a regular job? Yeah. Too?
So he was in the Navy. Then he got out of the Navy and got a real job, but he stayed in the reserves. So he would go to reserve duty, I don't know, X number of times at one of our local air bases.
Yeah.
And that's where he would go while we were in the Philadelphia area. And then, but he was, while he was in the Navy, he had gone to Hawaii and loved it. And he and my mother went there for, I don't know, second honeymoon. And the kids stayed back with a babysitter for 2 weeks. Well, then around 76, 77, they made the decision, we're going to sell everything. We're going to move to Hawaii and he's going to find a job when we get there. So So I know this is bleeding.
What was he doing? What did he do when he left the Navy?
Yeah, he worked at Scott Paper Company as a CPA kind of person.
Yeah, and that's kind of what he did.
Controller.
And so prior to having kids, did your mom work?
Nope.
She did. Secretary. Yeah, she modeled and she worked at Esso as a secretary. And that was basically it. Once she got married, she stayed home.
How did they meet?
Theater.
Yeah. They were in the King and I together, weren't they?
Yeah.
They a couple met, Cooper productions.
Couple, yeah. The musical, high school musical scene was, you know, not very big in Philadelphia at the time. So and mom went to a girl's school. Dad went to an all boys school.
Can I tell a little bit of the story? A little bit of details. So my dad sent hundreds of resumes to Hawaii to try to find a job and none of them landed. So this is where the craziness starts. He's like, screw it, let's just go to Hawaii. So
what age was everyone?
Seven.
I was in fifth grade.
Yeah, I was 14. 14, 12, 10, and 7.
Yeah. So we just like, we, and the funny story that I have is they just bought like 20,000, like this ungodly amount of furniture for the house. And then we said, screw it, we're out of here. And we moved to Hawaii and somebody else sold the house. I forget who sold the house. But then we lived in a hotel for 2 weeks in Hawaii. And the kids were in one room. And my parents were in another room and they were like down the hall. And so we lived, now remember the ages here. We lived in a room by ourselves and my mom and dad were in some other room and the Pagoda Hotel in Hawaii.
Yes, for that.
What island did you go to?
Oahu. Waikiki. Yes.
Yep.
Was it in the middle of the summer?
Yeah, yes, end of August.
August
26th.
Okay. August 26th. I'll never forget it.
Something like that. Yeah.
It was like, it might have been August, whatever.
Late August. Because they wanted to get there so we could be signed up for school.
Go to school. Yeah. So, okay. So what did you do for those 2 weeks?
Smelled trash. There was a trash chute.
We were near the trash. I know we went to Waikiki Beach and this is like pre-sunscreen and we all got sun poison on our faces and shoulders. So that's all I remember is walking around Waikiki and Ala Moana Shopping Center.
What was anyone pumped to move to Hawaii?
No.
Okay. I remember being scared out of my mind.
We were very close to our grandparents. So my maternal grandparents.
On both sides?
No, maternal. Just my mother. So like, you know, Sundays were at Nanny and Pop-Pop's house, typical Italian. So.
And it felt safe.
That was safe. Yes. Yeah. We had we lived in a suburban neighborhood. We had tons of friends. Like it was normal. We had a normal life. In suburbia, mostly, but like, you know, we had normal school and then like the church was right behind us. So we had a good life and all that ended in an instant when we got on the plane and didn't have any of that. So we had
you had some other protective factors, right? And that's what really like plays a big role into like how childhood trauma and dysfunctional families impact is like, if you have other family members that are healthy or, you know, community and all nanny. That stuff. So
all we had was each other.
No, we had Nanny too, man. Nanny was the rescuer.
Yeah.
Every time we came back, she would rescue us.
But even I imagine, sorry, Ashley, you're Andre. I imagine Nanny saved us from a lot of crap while we were growing up too. You know, bringing us.
Well, that was going to be my question. Do any of you ever remember talking to her about it?
I do.
Or her bringing it up to you.
Yeah. So like Sam said, we moved around a lot and by 1986, just 8 years later, Joanne, Sam and Matt had moved out and it was just my mom and I, and we left Philadelphia and we moved down to Cape May, New Jersey. And our nanny and papa bought a little house for us. It was a 2-bedroom house. So no room for anybody else. It was just me and my mother. So it was 4 houses down from my grandparents. So I never got along with my mother, surprise. So I spent a lot of time at Nanny's house. So we did talk about it. I mean, I don't remember the specifics, but it was, Nan, why did you always have to get a house for us? Why did you always have to put us up? Like, and things like that. So, and I think she was just more apologetic that we had to go through that. but she didn't really talk about the why.
Hey, Kate, can I add some detail to the craziness of that move to the Villas?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was going to say the hotel, we need to figure out what happened after the
2 weeks. Oh, the 2 weeks. Oh, my God.
Yeah, we're jumping around.
He was charming, and he got jobs. He's an accountant, so that the jobs are there no matter where you go. The story that I had, and anyone who's applied for jobs anywhere that's not in your city, is they don't want to pay for you to move, right? So that's probably why. Exactly. But if you're there, then you can get a job. So he got a job pretty quickly in Hawaii. So yeah, we'll come back to, there's a lot of details about Hawaii, but I just want to add the 2 cents for the move. I had gained earned a full scholarship for electronics tech school when I graduated high school in 1986. And my mother got sick of Philly and said, I'm moving to New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I just graduated. Yeah, like 2 weeks after graduation. I got a full scholarship. And I'm like, well, what am I going to do? She's like, well, you'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, all right. So we moved down to New Jersey. The week that we moved down, my friends were over in Wildwood, New Jersey. And I remember I rode my bike from the Villas to Wildwood and partied with them, not partied, but stayed with them for a week. And I came back, got in this huge fight with mom. She kicked me out.
Yep.
I was 17 years old and I had nothing. I had nothing, no support from my parents. And I had to figure it all out. And I lived with my friends and then my life got started. But it was like complete insanity. And then I'll never forget. I remember I came back. Kate, do you remember when I came back? Probably a year later. I didn't talk to my mother for a year. I came back. Normally like you come back and you got your room and you go, nothing.
There was no room for you.
Nothing. It was gone. All my stuff was gone.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, I guess I'm not coming home. So
two bedroom house.
So that was my experience on, going out on my own. It was like, make it or break it.
Yeah. Good once luck. You're 18, you're on your own.
Yeah. So anyway.
And I can kind of enlighten you about Hawaii. So we moved there in the summer of 78. We got it.
So you must've been going into your 10th grade.
I was in ninth. I went into ninth grade. And we stayed, I'll just give you a synopsis. We stayed there for all of ninth grade, 1 month of 10th. We moved back because my parents decided to split up. So I went through 10th grade, October 10th grade to March of 10th grade. Then they decided to get back together. We moved back to Hawaii.
Did your dad stay in Hawaii? Yes. And then yes. Your mom took you guys back?
Right. And then we moved back to Hawaii. So that was the rest of 10th, all of 11th, and 1 month of 12th grade. And then 12th grade, she decided that was it for real. And we left. And that's how we ended up back in Pennsylvania. So all of us schlepping through the different school years, five high schools, was for me. And then my siblings, Sam and Matt, and grade schools and middle schools and high schools. And
yeah, I was lucky enough to be the only one of the four of us that went to one high school for all 4 years.
Right.
Oh, I don't know what happened. The gods came and went.
He's that freaking lucky, so, man.
Yeah.
That's yeah. Good.
Yeah, I was lucky. And you know what? And here's the thing. Everyone else was successful. But for me, I was like, I was able to achieve things in high school. Like I made the co-captain of the swim team and I was the vice president of the class. And you can't do that crap if you're moving around a lot,
Nope.
And so, there was some stability there that, quickly ended when I graduated from high school.
Right.
But that's my little piece of that where there was.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
I was valedictorian of my senior year, though, final high school, and that was just a fluke.
So if I can just talk about how we left Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
The first time.
Yep.
Because this is a huge trauma point for me, one that I'm going to actively work on. So we had this beautiful house. Parents bought this beautiful house. Dad comes home drunk, rip-roaring drunk from some reserve thing that he's on, because I remember him being in his Navy uniform. They're screaming, fighting. He's bashing her around. She's screaming at him. She comes up the steps because my room is upstairs. She says, pack a bag. Pack whatever you can get in one bag. We are leaving today. I was 8. So whatever fit in that bag is what we took. And we sat in the fucking Honolulu airport all day waiting for a flight. All day. And whatever we had in the bag and on our back is what we took. And so God knows how much these airplane tickets were, but we got on an airplane. I don't know, whatever time later, we land in Philadelphia, fucking raining. It's October, November. And where you come into Philadelphia is a shit show. Oil refineries that didn't cap the emissions back in the 70s, metal recycling. And I was like, what the fuck just happened? And again, you want to start talking about shame and don't talk. Don't talk about it. I don't remember us ever actually acknowledging the fact that we only had what was in that suitcase. So, and that is what, that's why we went and my Uncle Joe picked us up at the airport. And I remember just none of us talking. We got to our grandmother's house and we lived with my grandmother for a couple of months. Luke and I had a room. I think Matt and Sam shared a room in the basement. God knows where my mother was. And that was the first, you know, abandonment of us getting ripped away from my dad. And to me, like I was actually just talking about this to my husband yesterday, because we're trying to plan a trip back to Hawaii. I haven't been back there since we left. And I said, I have to brace myself for just landing in the airport, because that airport is such a source of trauma. Not only that, but then we went back and then we left again. And when we left permanently, my dad was standing in the window watching our plane leave. And Matt, I think you and I were sitting together and I had the window seat and I could see my dad standing there watching our fucking plane leave.
Waving at us.
So you talk about dysfunction. So like, again, I don't remember a lot about my dad's drinking, but it's the it was the constant abandonment of one person or another, or getting ripped away from any kind of stability. So we get back to Philadelphia. We're living with my grandmother. And then thankfully she created a safe haven. We went to Matt, Sam and I went to one. Matt, you got to talk about the walk where you walked to Plymouth Meeting.
Oh yeah. I'm definitely going to talk about that.
Yeah. And then we got an apartment, and then my dad came back and like, I don't know what he said to my mother, but convinced us to move back. And that, so that we were home for 5 months. And this was the year that we all went to 3 different schools.
That story that Katie's talking about, the suitcase and stuff, that was the first time we left Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Dad had showed up. So there's a little backstory there. Dad showed up in a taxi cab and he had lost his car. That was one of them. The mm-hmm. other one, he had that kick-ass Grand Prix, that 78 Grand Prix. That had like velour interior that he like got so pissed.
Drunk. Oh, the gray. Oh, the green one with the tan interior.
You remember the green? It was beautiful, man. I love
it.
Oh,
yeah.
But he ruined it. He like sat in the driver's seat, passed out, pissed all over it, destroyed it. I'm like, are you serious, Dad? You're going to ruin this freaking car? But the day that we left Hawaii the first time, beautiful house, like idyllic place. My mom's like, get your clothes. Get your clothes and bring one toy.
Yep.
One. Why do you need one toy to do the laundry, Mom? Because that's what I thought. She's like, get your clothes. And I was like, oh, are you doing laundry? No, we're leaving. I'm like, what? Yeah, we're leaving. Leaving Hawaii. I'm like, what? That was my impression. So, yeah, suitcase full of your dirty clothes and everything a toy. And that was it.
We left and Hawaii. I wanted to bring my roller skates and they wouldn't fit. So I don't even think I brought anything. And it's so funny because what you guys describe, I have totally blocked out.
Like it was
yesterday. I don't remember any of this.
I like it was yesterday. We had the room, our room was painted green and it was like a cloudy overcast day. It's friggin' clear as day.
Yeah, I have relived that day 1,000 times.
Yeah, I remember packing and wanting my roller skates in my suitcase and not being able to bring it. That I remember that day. Sorry.
I brought my alligator.
And I had my
hang on to that.
Yeah, man.
You know, the thing that I remember about that day, and my recollections are very, very limited. I just remember hanging out in the Honolulu airport and for hours and hours and hours. And, you know, Mom was, she had us in a different terminal away from the gate and
hiding.
I remember that it just took so long. We waited so long. I remember having a magnifying glass that I was burning leaves or something. But yeah, I just remember the fact that, you know, the point of the matter was she was hiding from my father, which told me she was stealing us, that the departure from Hawaii was not mutually agreed to, and she was taking us away from my father.
The way that I remember this and having conversations with Mom, and I know we vilify Mom because she's nuts, but the blessing in all of this is that we were not, I mean, we had our share of physical abuse at the hand of my father, there's no doubt. But the witnessing of his drunkenness pretty much started to end at that point, maybe one or two, and we went back to Hawaii and we saw it. But for me and for my sister, especially, I did not witness my father, and we did not get abused by my father. So there was some saving grace to my mother taking us out of this situation. So as shitty as it is, she actually did protect us from that. And that's what I've tried, the grace that I've tried to give my mother is that she was trying to protect herself and her four children. So as shitty as it was, is that he could have beat the shit out of us. We could have been sexually abused. God knows what could have happened had we stayed there.
Yeah, I think I hear you, Kate, but my dad, dad drank away from us. You know, he didn't.
He'd always come home. He would come home though, and he'd come home drunk.
Blast.
Yeah.
Roaring drunk, and he and Mom would go at it, and he would beat her.
Yeah.
And I remember him, he would check on us. He would come in because I'm an extremely light sleeper. And so I've thought about this, like, had we stayed, what would I have witnessed or experienced as a young female with a rip-roaring drunk father? So he didn't drink at home, but he came home.
Yeah. I'm not making it light on dad.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah. Really? I'm just.
There's anyway.
So let's talk about the roles. So like we have the hero, the scapegoat, the lost child, the mascot. Often we may occupy more than one role. We might switch. So I'd be curious to hear about that for y'all.
I was the comedian. How about that? I'll start.
You were the mascot? I could tell.
I was the comedian. I kept everything. I'm like, hey, look over here. There's nothing. No, the shit's not blowing up back there. Everything's fine.
I think I was the lost child because I don't remember much of that time. And as soon as I was able to, I got out of there.
Hey, Sam, could we also say that you guys checked out before? Think about, you know, like partying and just being outside the house. Like, shit, man, I wasn't in the house. I was never in the house.
There was a park in that last apartment across the street, and we would hang out there till it got dark, till the lights came on. You know, who knows what we were doing, but yeah, we didn't want to be home at all.
No, and I remember taking on, you know, the role of caregiver. I did take on like the responsibilities, like and of going to my sister's, I think it was Katie's parent teacher meeting. And I did the boutonnieres for my brother's proms, you know, Katie baked cakes and cooked for us. I worked full time. I went to school.
When did you start working full time? At what age?
You were 16.
I'm
you're 16. Working at Popeye's Chicken.
Yeah, I worked at Popeye's Chicken. But like before that, I would clean houses and babysit and stuff like that. The first time we moved back from Hawaii. And then when we moved back to Hawaii, I worked at Liberty House. Yeah, I mean, I always worked full time because I had to give my mother money.
Right.
Hey, Pook, I started working it when I was 12.
Yeah.
Mom got me a job at the rectory. I was 12 years old.
Yeah.
Sitting at the rectory.
Yeah, I did that too. I worked at Epiphany's Rectory. Like whenever she could find us a job, she had us working.
And I delivered papers.
Mm-hmm.
Remember mm-hmm. that?
Yeah.
It was like be on my bike with 120 papers.
Mm-hmm.
It was incredible.
The irony of all that is that our mother didn't work until she absolutely had to.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. For me, I guess the last description is the perfect child. Like the kid that's going to get the good grades and stay fly under the radar, because I got to watch all the fuck ups of my siblings. But I learned how not to get caught.
Nobody talked about that. I mean, like, where is the scapegoat? Like, where is that? Who is getting into trouble?
We all kept our shit together for the most part. Nobody got arrested.
Well, you know, I cut my finger in seventh grade, so that was traumatic. I cut my finger in a wood shop, almost cut my finger off. So that seemed to take a lot of the attention from my mother and father fighting. The rest of it, you know, I'll speak for myself. I got into hanging out at a bowling alley, getting high, drinking, and doing who knows what. But that's what I did to check out.
Was that in Hawaii, Sam, the bowling alley, or was that up in
Andorra? That was Hawaii.
I remember that's when I first smoked a cigarette, was at that bowling alley.
Oh, yeah.
Back when. And I think my son at Virginia Tech right now is 14 years old. I'm like, we had smoked weed in Hawaii before that age. And that's smoked cigarettes at the bowling alley and stuff like that. We weren't like hoodlums or anything like that, but it was like, I can't imagine these guys, my kids smoking weed at the ages that we did.
I was sent to rehab at 14.
Yeah.
What's that?
I was sent to rehab at 14.
Oh my goodness. God.
Yeah. I know that for me, like being the oldest, I was always blamed. Why didn't I watch the kids, you know, not do this, not do that. And my mother would beat the shit out of me. Mm. And she beat all of us, but I remember her ripping my hair out, like, and just beating the shit out of me all the time over, you know, anything she could think of. She took it out on all of us. But I just remember, like, why didn't you watch and why didn't you prevent that from happening? Why don't you do that? But why don't you be a fucking mother and do it yourself? You know, you watch it over your own goddamn kids, you know, instead of, you know, and I'm like, and then so I didn't, you know, I took it and I, you know, she kicked me out of the house and I had to live out of the house. And then she had to have her hysterectomy. No, who did she want to come back? Me, to help her. So, you know, it's just a vicious manipulation of power play throughout my entire life.
That was back on Arrowhead Lane. You taught me how to shower or bathe myself.
Did I?
There's this weird thing where like mom's like, go bathe. And I'm like, I don't know how to go bathe yourself, boy.
Bobby.
I'm like,
that's right.
Bobby.
Wash your ass, Bobby. You know, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. You were the one that's like, use the rag and here's some soap. And you put some shampoo in your hair and you just like, why the hell did you teach me that shit? That's crazy, man. So well, she checked out. What's that?
I'm glad it worked out, man. I'm glad you know how to wash your ass. Pablo.
Glad
you're welcome.
Glad you're able to bathe.
You're welcome, everybody.
Thank you. I owe you a cup of coffee.
Happy to be of service.
But just to go back, you know, I think having to grow up at a young age, I think we all talked about when our first job was. I was 10, cleaning her insurance office for $5 a week. Because I had to buy everything I needed. So when I eventually needed female products, I had to buy them. I had to buy my own school supplies. And it wasn't that we were destitute. It was because my fucking father didn't send the support check. And my mother worked minimum wage jobs as some secretary. So if we actually wanted or needed something, we had to pay for it. And it was made known that if you want something, you have to go buy it. So I remember, like, you know, the $5 that had to last. And sometimes I'd take a quarter and go buy a Pepsi. But I actually had two jobs. I delivered papers for years just to have some sort of money. So like we always had a hustle. We always had to hustle and pay for our own things. So be extremely self-reliant. And I think, you know, it's catching up to me now. And Tammy, you and I were talking about it the other day. It's like, I'm so tired of working. I'm like, I'm only 51. I'm like, I've been working for 41 years. Like, when am I going to be done? You know, I think we're all like got that eye on like, when can we fucking stop working? Because we've had to work since we were little kids and figure shit out on our own. And, you know, when we talk about the time that we were on Smick Street, like the lack of parenting, I was 8 or 9 years old, wandering, walking around the streets of Honolulu, which is not a safe place. I'm wearing my sister's roller skates just so I could get there faster. And, you know, we were never home because it wasn't a safe home to be in.
No.
I almost feel like, though, that because y'all had to hustle and work, that in a sense, that prevented you from, like, totally fucking up. Like,
oh, totally.
I was going to make a joke about that. I'm like, yeah. We didn't have time to fuck up.
Yeah.
We
oh, and then mom, but our mother takes credit for that.
Yeah.
Well, look. You have
oh, yeah, but you're all turned how, out okay.
Look
yeah.
how you turned out. That was because of me.
It's like I never had a childhood, it seemed like.
Yeah.
Like we were working on and my story real quick is like I had three jobs at one time as a teenager in high school. I worked at Bob Castle's gas station. I did the books at the at that shitty insurance place, and I worked at Eagle Lodge.
Yeah.
I had three, who the hell has three jobs like a teenager?
Right.
Yeah, and we handed our checks over to our mother.
Well, let me say you know, this. I think I paid, but I didn't pay like you guys did.
No, you guys both. Kept food on the table.
Sam fed kept food on us the
table and clothing. You bought me clothes, Pook, and Sam, you know, I have fond memories of leftover cheeseburgers and bags of chicken nuggets coming home. And that was the meat that we ate because you cooked too much.
I like quarter pounders, man. Quarter pounders.
Did your dad stay in Hawaii?
Yep.
He did the entire time.
Oh, I got a story about that. I'm sorry. Yeah. So he came back like the last time he came back to Philly. We were you know, graduating high school and whatever. And he's like, wow, I come back and everybody's leaving. And I'm like, you dumbass. What did you expect?
I think we saw him maybe three times in 10 years. Maybe.
Yeah, he was.
He stayed because he was in active addiction. So there was no way he could come back. Because he knew it, where would he stay? With us? He wasn't going to stay with us. He did eventually move back to Philadelphia in 1991, 92, because he had, he was a very sick man by then. But
so my dad brought me out to Hawaii when I graduated high school. I had 2 weeks out there in Hawaii. And he had this dream that I was going to stay there and go to University of Hawaii. And I'm like, what are you talking about, Dad? I'm here for a visit, man. But what had happened was that you talk about active alcoholism. I will never forget. I looked in his room. I should have never looked in his room. I opened up his door. I was like, holy shit, Dad. He had a dirt. It was like a crack den in his freaking room. Yeah. Talk about a shit show. That room was a shit show. That man's a grown man. He had a mattress, a shitty disgusting mattress on the ground, and there was crap all not crap but
yeah.
junk filth all over his room. I'm like, who lives in here, like a crack addict? And that was his house, that, you know. Anyway, so then there we would visit the Oar House. Sam knows about the Oar House. O-A-R. It's a bar,
not W-H-O-R-E.
Not whore.
Right. Not whore.
Or
that would have been fun, man,
without the W-H.
But the Oar House, and I'll never forget, like, I was playing pool, and they're like, how old are you? And then when I said I'm 17, they kicked us out, and we weren't allowed to go back. And then my dad and I, we moved into some, like, apartment room that the hospital we worked at sponsored. So we, like, completely moved out of this shit house, and we never went back to the ore house. And so, but that's how fucked up he lived. It was like, Dad, who the fuck lives like this?
Matt, and he lived like that when he moved back to Philadelphia when he was on, I had to clean out that apartment, which was a whole, that was 1998, 99, and he had still lived the same way. He had a room in a boarding house with a bunch of other alcoholic men, and I went in there, and it was awful, but that's a topic for another chapter.
What was the cause of death? Cirrhosis?
It was cancer, which ultimately got him, but he had pancreatitis, really bad, of course, alcoholic disease. But he came out to Tucson to live with us. I think it's fair to say that he lived with every one of us at one time or another, and finally came out to Tucson. And after he, because he had dementia, he was starting to lose his mind, he would wander away from the house, and then we'd have to go find him. So we ended up putting him in a home, where he was not able to leave, and eventually he died there not too long.
He just turned 62, right?
Yeah.
And he was just shy of turning 63 on Matt's birthday.
On my birthday, Sam and Pook, they lived in Arizona. They call me up on my birthday. I'm like, oh, hi, guys. Happy birthday. Da, da, da. Well, Matt, Dad died on my fucking birthday. Could you imagine, like, really?
Oh, the irony.
Oh, I love it. And then my father-in-law, my ex-father-in-law, you guys, I don't know if you know this, but Lionel, every year, he's an old Jewish guy. You know, you have respect for the dead. He's like, on my birthday, he's like, I'm so sorry your dad died. I'm like, really, Lionel? You don't ever have to say that again. And he's like, for freaking 10 years, it's like, oh, I'm so sorry your dad died. I'm like, no, okay, you're freaking killing me.
Okay, shit show dudes, you can tune out. This is for my fellow shit show ladies. Are you going through perimenopause or menopause? I'm not quite there yet, but I know that I have plenty to look forward to. Feeling like a wet sock driving down the highway. Night sweats. Poor sleep. Feeling tired all the time. Bloating. Gas. Man, can't wait for this shit. Now, if that is applicable to you, then you have to try Hormone Harmony. So Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 fucking seconds, okay? Now, Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work. Now, for my younger shit show women like myself, if you struggle from that vicious week before your period, you want to crawl out of your skin, experience cravings, want to eat everything in the damn house, you feel a little bit down or off, well, Happy Mammoth also has a product for you to make it easier to manage your PMS with their Estro Control. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code adultchild at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code adultchild for 15% off today.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
So let's get into the real reason that we're here. I want to talk about how has the impact of your childhood shown up in your lives as adults?
I'll go first while y'all think about it. Well, I'm finally in a successful, happy marriage after two failures, marrying narcissistic workaholics.
So let's talk about that some.
Yeah. Let's.
So dating your mother?
Dating a combination of my mother and my father. That's what's really fucked up. When I, now in hindsight and being in the program, And I don't know how I hit the jackpot with my current husband, who's not fucked up at all. I mean, he's got his own problems, but not this. So yeah, let's get in relationships with people that will emotionally abuse and ultimately abandon me and withhold money. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My first and second husband were the carbon copies of themselves. Thankfully, I didn't have children with my first husband, and that marriage was annulled. But my second husband is the father of my children. So I get to see his ass every couple months. But yeah.
And after you got out of that second marriage, was there a conscious effort to do things differently?
Yes. Lots of therapy.
Not shaking his head. No.
Yeah. I wasn't going to get married. I was like, that's it. I have my kids. I have my job. I have my own house. Actually kind of rebuked the advances of Mark, my current relationship several times. But through the grace of God, just like I say, it's a miracle I can put my pants on. Somehow I had a guardian angel watching over me all those years when I was roaming the streets alone as a little girl, that I finally got it right. And I will say, because I hit a bottom 3 years ago, you know, thinking that this marriage wasn't going to last because nobody stays with me. Everybody leaves me. Everybody leaves me. So I might as well preempt it. I don't deserve it. And I was happy. Mm-hmm. And it is a pattern. And and now I'm so aware of it. Mm-hmm. My world collapsed. And that was like, I called Pook, my sister Joanne, and she said, get an Al-Anon meeting. And I went to an Al-Anon meeting. And then a week later from that meeting, somebody said, you know, you really should try this adult children alcoholics meeting on Friday. And I walked in that meeting, somebody handed me a red book and I was like, holy fuck. And I went to that meeting every Friday for a year and a half until COVID, and then went to another meeting. But it was as if, so I'd been in therapy, and that's a kicker. Like, I'd been in therapy for 20 years.
That is everyone's experience. It's like, we sit in therapy and they never tell us what the fuck is wrong with
us. And I'm like, but there's something wrong with me. And it's right under the surface. And I could never, and it was like, and I guess my red book's in the car, but I'm like, it was what's in the book, the red book. And I never found it in therapy. And so when I started to unpack, and Sam and I have talked about this, like so many pages of that book, you know, the woman with the can of potatoes in the closet, because we had food insecurity. So many of us, like, my cabinets are always bursting with food. I always have cake mix. Because like my sister said, I was, that's how I save the family. I'm going to make fucking cupcakes. So that's how it manifested. I'm a workaholic. I got my doctorate degree, 3 years ago. I have my day job, which is amazing. And then I teach. So like, I'm always busy, because if I'm not, then I feel the whole world is going to crumble down and I'm going to have nothing. So that's kind of where I'm at. That was a lot. But
when I read the red book, it's like, for the first time, seeing everything that I had felt and thought on, you know, on paper for the very first time.
Yeah.
Like, thank you, God. I'm not crazy. Well, I am crazy, but I'm not alone.
It's so neat to hear that, Kate, because the mantra that I had for years, and it's finally gotten better, is I'm addicted to chaos.
Yep. And that's, do you know that that's one of the laundry list traits? Yep. We become addicted to excitement.
Like like just what you're saying, Kate, if things are good, then I start some shit, man. I'm gonna start a fight. I'm gonna fuck with somebody, because it's not right, man. I don't feel right unless the shit is just blowing up. You know, and because I was used to that, like, let's move back and forth to Hawaii 15 times and go to, I went to 15 schools by the time I got to high school, 15 schools. I think it's something like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't even sound like it's possible, but it did.
Well, it's an actual, like, the actual chemicals, like, we get actually addicted to the chemicals that is producing in our brain.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was true. And it's like, I don't know if I'm getting old and tired. I'm like, okay, I'm done. I'm done with that chaos.
I'm done.
You know, I don't know, but that's the way, and like anger, you know, I mean, anger, freaking rage. I think, like, I can't watch TV shows now with a lot of screaming. Like, Frasier cannot watch it. How many TV shows, they just scream and yell at each other, because I freaking lived that for my whole life. So I can't, and I'm already a loud person. Can you imagine, like, when I have an argument, it's like, listen, we're going down now. You know, it just goes from zero to 8 million in no time, because that's what you, so I got to bring this story up, guys. Remember the tape, the tape of Christmas, the Christmas tape?
Yes.
So we think like this insanity started because of Hawaii or how this shit was been going on forever. We have a tape from like 1972 or something like that, where my mom's like, all right, everybody, screaming and yelling, Sam, get the kids dressed. We're going to church for Christmas. So this tape is like 2 hours long of absolute friggin' mayhem in the house. And I'm like, how the fuck did we live? Like, so, you know, the whole time, every 20 minutes, my mom's like, get the kids dressed. We're going to Christmas. Total insanity. And then it's like, God damn it, we're fucking late. Now we're not going to go to fucking church for Christmas. I'm like, my God. Well, who lives like this, man?
Oh, so, good.
Anyway, where is that shit?
What's that?
The tape. Oh, where's the tape? I think we all have copies.
We got copies.
My mom made copies of it.
Yeah, mom made copies of that tape. Well, because my grandfather used to just put, like, record the family, and it was actually quite sweet, because then it was great to hear, like, aunts and uncles and things like that. So for some reason, I guess my dad hit the record because they were making cookies and we're like getting ready. So it was like happy.
Right. Christmas Eve. Yeah.
In theory.
Hmm.
Matt, you're on mute.
You're muted.
I think it's because he wanted evidence.
Yeah, exactly.
Vanity, man.
Like playing like some Amber Heard, Johnny Depp shit.
Court. Oh, God. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Sam. How are you, and how did this shit show up for you?
Well, I feel like I was at an age when this started happening where I started feeling very insecure as far as relying on other people. And so as soon as I was able to, pretty much, I joined the military, had a wonderful Air Force career. Now I work for the government, and it's a great career. I, would buy houses to fix up and rent, and I did real estate investing. So for me, financial security was my responsibility, and I pursued multiple opportunities to do that. I feel like it has put me in a secure place for me and my family. My wife, Anne, is on the call, and we have two wonderful children in college. So we are taken care of. And I feel like the financial piece of it is what I equate with security. You know, I hate relying on people. I was always like, no, I'll do it myself. It didn't matter what it was. If it was something insanely difficult where, you know, having someone help me would be no big deal, I would insist on doing it myself. Now the change is that I became a paraplegic in 2020. So now I am reliant on people to help me out. So I think it's rather ironic that I ended up, you know, trying to be so independent and do it myself, goddammit. And now I need help. Now I have to be able to ask for help when I need it. So that's how this showed up. But, you know, I think we've all come through this. You know, none of us went to prison. None of us are continuing to be addicted. We're all working a 12-step program of one sort or another. I went to school and ended up getting a master's degree because I thought education was the key to being an effective provider. And so, you know, going to school. So, you know, on the surface, everything looks like it was just fine. Mm-hmm. But there is, I'm a people pleaser. I'm afraid of angry people. You know, I thought it was funny that, you know, I relate to all 15 of the 14 traits. You know, you know, yeah. So, you know, hyper responsible, afraid of people, you know, the guy that disappears into the background, you know, the one that leaves. So that's how this shows up for me. But, you know, after all the bitching and complaining that I do about my parents, somehow or another, they implanted the seeds of success in every one of us. And I'm very grateful for that. Maybe it was a divinely inspired sense to just do better than they did, and take what happened and turn it around and make the best of it. So I think all of us have done that, you know, in the face of adversity, we have thrived. And I credit my higher power for that, because Amen. Certainly it didn't come from my parents. I think it might have come from my father. He was a good spirit. I feel compassion for him now. He did, you're right, Matt. He did take us to go places, do stuff. He would take us to a beach in Hawaii called Bellows Beach. He'd pack a lunch, and I remember the cool white sand and the palm trees, and we would just be out there with a boogie board all day. We'd come back, of course. We're all going to have skin cancer in like 15 minutes, but he took us, and we had a nice time. So after the physical abuse ended, I think that was the end of the abuse. Maybe I'm wrong from him. He answered my call every time I called him. But, you know, I joined the Air Force and didn't have a fucking thing to do with any of the family for months and months and months. And I remember getting a call into my first sergeant's office that my mother had called the Red Cross, because she didn't know if I was okay or not. And so he made me call her, but it was probably 6 months, I don't know, into the tour in the Philippines. But I got the fuck out and went as far away as I could.
Sam,
all right, thanks, sis.
Can I add one thing real quick? Sure. Because I want to take it back to what Katie was talking about, the walk that I had. And I think this is an important one. The impulsiveness that I have, the absolute not giving a shit about anything. I'll drive you right into the frigging gutter if you piss me off on the road. I don't fucking care. I'll drive 150.
Okay, everyone, miles. Watch out for him. What's your license plate number?
Oh, man, so you can stay be aware. Me, man. Just recently, like within the last 2 years, I've stopped doing that crazy shit. I would drive as fast as I
possibly can. So he says. So he says.
Yeah, until, you know, some asshole.
Until the next time.
Till tomorrow. But but the impulsiveness, like, I'm like, why do I feel like I could just, like, I'll just do whatever. I'll go fast. I'll get in a fight. Fuck it. I have, like, no fear, like, zero fear, right? And it's weird because other people are, like, they're fearful. And I'm like, what's fucking wrong with you, man? Just do it. And so the way the non-fear thing manifested itself when I was a little kid, me and my brother got in a fight. We were living with my grandmother. And I was like, he punched me in the face. I said, fuck you, man, I'm out. And I left. And I walked 12 miles to our old house in Plymouth Meeting because I wanted to go visit my old friends. And of course, they moved, right? So there's no one there. So could you imagine? I was in St. Lucie's. I was in, like,
yeah, 1980
ish. Sixth grade.
I was sixth in grade. Seventh grade, maybe. Seven, sixth, how old is yeah. that? Was it 12?
I think it was sixth grade back because I was at St. Lucie's in eighth grade.
That's sixth grade.
Yeah.
So whatever age that is, I walked my ass in a sweater in the friggin' winter, 12 miles up to Plymouth meeting. Because fuck it, you punch me and I'm out. Oh, anyway, and then we'll see. Speaking of St. Lucie's, I remember standing in line and some asshole behind me was talking and they blamed me and they told me to get out of the classroom. I said, all right, fuck you, I'm out. And I left. I left school.
I walked to
my grandmother's house. I was like, all right, you want me out of the school? I'm out. See you. And I left and they couldn't find me, man. I felt like $1 million. So I get to my grandmother's house. She's like, what the hell are you doing here? And she drove my ass right back to school. I was like, oh man, fuck that. But that was the only time I ever got suspended, was for because I got pissed off when I left school. So anyway, just impulsiveness. I think it's been a theme my whole life where I'm like, fuck it, I don't care. I'll just go do it. Over. Mm-hmm.
Over. All right, big sissy.
All right. So I'm gonna speak in the present. How this shit show showed up in my life. Today I can look back and say, I'm working on another four step. It's like my third one. And the first, I have to list my resentments. And to me, it's really hard to do that because it's like, I don't want to blame anybody for my fuck ups. And yet, or how come I feel so bad? So like, it goes back to my feeling of worthiness, my feeling of acceptance, acknowledgement, not being abandoned, and a people pleaser. And like, for many, many years, I wanted my mother's approval. Like, I knew my dad loved me no matter what. I mean, he, like everybody said, he would take us and do things with us. He taught us how to swim. I am a good swimmer today because of him. He took us swimming. He took us on drives when my mother was crazy. So I don't have that wanting acceptance from my father, and I'll get to why not. But my mother, I always felt that I needed to have an allegiance to my mother because it's my mother. It's part of the Ten Commandments, you know, like honor thy father and thy mother. And I carried her shit show into my life in so many different ways. I acted out eating a lot of food. I overate, I overdrank. I probably went out with too many people, got into too many precarious situations where thankfully I got out alive. I didn't get arrested almost, but it's just recently in the past six years or so that I finally have the clarity and the peace that I understand and I accept myself for who I am. The shit show showed up in my marriages. I was married twice. I married the first guy because I was 24. Even though I had a successful career, I was a hairdresser and I was on a design team, working full-time, got out, had my own apartment, my own car, my own credit established, had already started traveling the world. It was never good enough for my mother in my mother's eyes, never good enough. And so when I got married to this guy, because I was 24 and what was wrong with me? I need to be married, have kids, blah, blah, blah. So I married that idiot because he was just some sucker. And I talked him into, you know, well, we've been going out for 2 months. We might as well get engaged.
Oh, this is what everybody does.
Yeah, no. Don't you know somebody
who's not getting any younger here?
You know, so bada bing, I was married a year and a day later after I met this guy. And, you know, went to Aruba and, you know, I knew it was over when he said, I'm going to go for a walk on the beach. I said, well, I'll go with you. He goes, no, I want to go myself. I was like, that was it. That was over. Wow. So like that acceptance, that seeking approval was always what I strived for. I always wanted positive affirmations that I was a worthy human being. And, you know, I used drugs and alcohol to boost that confidence. And to be a part of the crowd, you know, and never getting it. And I got into recovery and I practiced the program. I met my husband who was in the program. I had two beautiful kids that were I wanted to be nothing but a mother, you know, and yet in my ear was my mother constantly telling me how bad I was as a mother. Mm-hmm. And that drove me to want to leave my husband, to move back to Pennsylvania. I found every nitpicking thing wrong with that man that could possibly be picked on. And yet he was my husband. He was the father to my children. He loved his sons. Were we a perfect couple? No. Was he a perfect father? No. Was I a perfect mother? Absolutely not. But we at least tried, really super tried, went through, both our kids had special needs, went through every parenting class known to man to do for our kids, you know, to help them get through school and whatnot. It was still not good enough in my mother's eyes that this guy was sticking with me no matter what. And I finally just ended up saying, fuck you, I'm out of here, because before you hurt me, I'm going to hurt you.
Yep.
And so I'm going to cheat on you. I'm going to lie. I'm going to steal time from my kids to go do the things that I want to do. And I ended up going out and drinking. And I did that.
How long have you been sober?
I had been sober for 12 years.
Wow.
12 or 13 years. But towards the end, you know, I was getting
the mental relapse starts way before.
It, yeah, totally. Like I was in relapse in Hawaii because a childhood friend hooked up with me, and you know, the grass is always greener, and waving that gold ring that was nothing but a bunch of bullshit. You know, he was married. It's just that insanity that you think, oh, it's something better out there. And so I never worked on the program. I never did the program for me. I did it because of everybody else. Like, well, this is what I'm supposed to do. Okay. But I never truly, honestly bought into the fact that I was an addict, that I was an alcoholic, and that I had a serious issue with owning up to my own life. And so that I could actually have permission to have and lead my own life and to listen to that inner child and say, Twan, it's okay. It's okay you messed up, and it's okay that you have that thought, and you are allowed to continue that thought through to the very end. And so the battle was ongoing for years and years and years, and I tried to do the best as I could with my kids. I ended up kicking out my son, which to this very day is something I highly regret, but I did it when I was back in the program. You know, I got clean in 2014, and I use the word clean because I love the program of NA, because it says alcohol is a drug. And to me, you know, it's everything. And I really like that. And I've really jumped right in with both feet to my program. I got into service and everything. And that is where that woman, that self-worth came into play. And then being introduced to Al-Anon and Nar-Anon and ACOA, and just getting myself immersed in this positive affirmation of life. I don't need that from anybody else. I can get that from me. I'm very afraid of having a relationship with a man, of getting into a committed relationship again. I'm very afraid. I'm putting it out there that I'm open to it. You know, I'm learning how to say I'm open to this. I'm open to have a better relationship with my sons. But bottom line is these last couple of years, like I feel like the shit show, I've set those boundaries. I don't accept it anymore. And I just want to get on with my life and live my life the best way and serve others, you know, I'm grateful that the shit show is still present in my life because it reminds me of what I don't want in my life. You know, I don't want my mom in my ear telling me how I did this wrong or that wrong, or I could have been this better or that better. And, you know, us four kids made a pact in Hawaii, the last house, second to last house, the first time we moved on Camillo Street, lived in Hawaii Kai. And we made a pact that no matter what, we would stick together. And that is just, that is what has carried me through these years, is having that relationship with my brothers and my sister and their spouses, you know, like that is the gift. So to learn through the program and work in the steps and work with a sponsor, to learn how to see the good things in people and really, really, really put that wall up against that shit show. Like, just, I don't want to live like that anymore. You know, I can say that I'm at peace 99.9% of the time. And every now and then, and you know, now it's my son who's mad at me, thinks I destroyed his life. Okay, well, you know what? I thought my mother fucking destroyed my life. So get over it, find a program and move on with your life. Right? Yeah. It's like, I can't, I'm so grateful. Like Sam said, the higher power, like my higher power has given me such gifts that are beyond my wildest dreams. Like I have a life today that I'm not moving because I need to, I'm moving because I want to. I'm working at a job because I want it, not because I need it, you know? And it's true. I feel like what Katie said, like, I have a 5-year goal, man. I have a 5-year plan. In 5 years, I'm on a beach. I'm going to be flying that little plane with the little flag that says drink at Joe's. I don't care. And, you know, selling puzzle books and pencils on the beach. That is my goal. I want to have no responsibility and yet be responsible, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I'm just so tired of being a responsible human being and having to go to food banks to make sure my kids had meat on the table. And to work 2-3 jobs as a mom to make sure my kids had new sneakers. And, you know, that relying on other people. My siblings helped me out beyond measure. And I think that kept me out of the grave, because not that I was ever suicidal. I just wanted to go to sleep. I went into a hospital because I wanted to sleep. I just wanted to shut down for a minute. And you know, that was where my life turned around, and I hit a couple bumps, but you know, I'm not going to give up. And that's the hope of the program. You know, that yes, my life was a shit show. It could be a shit show tomorrow, but I don't have to live that way because I have tools and I have people that I can reach out to, and I'm not alone. And I am validated by people that my higher power sends into my life on a daily basis. It's just a miracle. I'm grateful. I'm a very grateful recovering addict and adult child of an alcoholic. You know, I'm grateful that my parents were as fucked up as they were, because I know I don't have to choose that way of life. Mm-hmm. So that's how the fuck show manifested in my life.
The fuck show. I love it.
Oh my God.
We like to say fuck around here. That's what I was thinking about making t-shirts for my like support community. We like to say fuck around here.
And I know. I love what you said, the fucking shit show.
So that reminds me. So I used to go to NA meetings when I was like in the eighth grade, because I wanted to be different from my mom, who was in AA. But I remember they used to say, this was in Philly, I don't know if they still do this, but when they would read that reading where it says, they would say alcohol is a drug, then everyone would go, say what? And then they'd repeat it.
Did they still do that? Do okay. It.
Okay. Last question for discussion. I want it, and we'll see if you guys I think you'll be comfortable talking about this, but I want to talk about what your relationship with your mom looks like.
Oh, you beat me to it.
I was hoping you'd ask that question.
I was actually going to say,
I know a little bit from Sam, but I don't. Yeah. But I was hoping you all could share on this.
I'm the only one that talks to her. And I'm the only one. She's fucked it up with all the rest of them, and I'll let them tell the story. But she, I don't know. She's in her place with me. I don't know why. Maybe she just hasn't gotten around to it, but she loves to like, and I'll let them tell the story. But I talk to her. Because I love her. I love her. And I don't know, man. You know, we're only on this freaking planet for a really short
period. Oh, man. See what he just did there? Threw that little jab in there. Oh, I talked to her because I love her.
I talked to her because I fucking love her.
Well, and you know what? That's okay. Like, it, you know, we all have our different spaces where we've decided, okay, enough is enough. Mm-hmm. And I went through a brief spell earlier around Easter time with my sponsor going, I'm feeling so overwhelmed and guilty for not talking to my mother. And it's a brand new sponsor, which is so cool because it's just a fresh perspective. And she's like, Duane, just pray on it. Just pray on it. And I called her and, you know, I wished her a happy Easter. And she texted me back, thank you for your message. Then she called me and I called her back. But I kept it straight, mm-hmm. simple.
Business.
Like nothing mm-hmm. personal. Everybody's great. We're all fabulous. Yeah. I won the lottery. I'm going touring around the world.
She's like, give me part of that.
Yeah. Hey, just so right? you know, I don't say that. I don't say that to like dig the other
no, three.
I know.
That's where I'm at. You know,
it's okay, Matt. You
just
know.
Wait. You haven't had your turn yet.
Oh my God. I was going to say that, Andrea. The shit will hit the fan soon enough. But you know what? Enjoy
it. Yeah, now that Joanne's talking to her again, it'll be a matter of time, Matt. Just wait.
It's okay. I'm glad I'm glad I talked to her. I don't ever have to talk to her again.
Yeah. Exactly.
I don't. I'm just done. I'm done.
I think that's part of it too, is like, we don't have to make a decision to like cut our parents off. Like we can just make a decision like just for today. I'm not having a relationship with my mom and we reassess tomorrow.
I'm going to take a different tact because mine is I'm not speaking to my mother. Mm-hmm. What we haven't covered here is toxic shame and being mm-hmm. ashamed and being made to feel that we're not good enough our entire fucking life, mm-hmm. no matter what we do. That was my mother and my relationship with her. And when my brother Sam was sick, we all went out and we stayed with mom, and I've had an on and off relationship with her for 40 years.
Was this when? 2 years ago?
About 2 years ago. Yeah. And there was some back and forth, and I don't quite remember she couldn't get in to see Sam at a rehab. He was in rehab by the time. And
where does she live?
Tucson. So this is, I'm telling you, the straw that broke my back. And I said, Mom, because she started to attack us, and including Anne and Colleen as well. We're family group chat. And Mom, you have to respect the doctors, blah, 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 blah. And I don't know what the fuck she started with, but she texted, I'm so ashamed that you're my daughter. You're mentally ill and you have dementia and you need to be in a blah, blah, blah. And I was like, thank you for finally putting it in writing what I had felt my entire fucking life, that no matter how good I performed in school, no matter what I did, my mother was ashamed of me. Thank you for saying it. And that was that. I haven't spoken to her. I blocked her, no contact. I will never speak to her again. And she knows it. And I don't have to fucking explain it to her. I don't feel guilty about it. Do I mourn the loss on Mother's Day that I don't have a mom to go get pedicures with? Sure. But I have done every single thing that I could have done as a 9-year-old girl to a 50-year-old woman to have a relationship with my mother. I've given her tens of thousands of dollars. I bought her a house. I bought her a car. I paid off credit card debt. It was never enough. I was never enough. So when I look at the root of all my problems, yes, my father's a fucking alcoholic who abandoned us. That is a whole set of problems. My mother's toxic shame of how she made me feel is why I will never speak to her. And I've made peace with that. And if she lives in another 20 years or she drops dead tomorrow, there's nothing I can do. I wish her well. I don't wish her any ill. I do love her, but I don't have a relationship, and I'm okay with that because my mental health and what that has destroyed over and mm-hmm. over, it's a cycle in my life where I was so codependent on her, so desperate for her approval and love that I would give up myself over and over and over again. And I'm like, fuck that. I am never doing that again. And the fact that she fucking wrote it. Now, I just got a doctorate like 6 months earlier. I have three beautiful children. I have a normal house that I've lived in for 18. Like, I am a good person.
Clearly very mentally ill, and clearly you have
And I was like,
it is all making sense now. I've been trying to figure out what's wrong with you the whole time we've been talking.
I mean, so, but that's the thing. And so it's like, we all have anxiety and depression issues. Well, that was my anxiety, was like, how do I please my mother? How do I take care of her? And it was like classic narcissist behavior where she'd get in and then she'd flip the tables. So my relationship is no relationship, no contact, 100% boundary. And I had to do that to preserve my sanity and preserve my marriage and my family. And I had to circle the wagons. Again, I have three teenage kids. This was in the midst of COVID. I was trying to keep my kids fucking alive because of all this mental health crazy shit going on. I was like, I can't have her bringing me down when my kids are having problems. I can't be the sick one. And she's gone on the attack on them too. And we had a block, they've had a blocker. So that's my story. And that is what I go in to my ACOA meetings trying to work out, is that guilt. Even though I say I'm not guilty, it's the constant reminder of why I am no contact. And it's the constant work to overcome that toxic shame, which is fucking hard. So hard.
I get it.
Sorry, Katie. Sorry, so it sucks so bad. I just want to add, like with mom, we've all experienced this. How do you feel, Matt? You're like, fuck that. I'm not answering that shit because I'm depressed. You know, well, you know, well, you're fucked up, you know, or whatever it is, you know. She just has this way of saying, how do you feel? You sound tired or whatever. And then you're like, oh, mom wants to. She really wants to love me. Shit.
She's interested.
Wants to love me. And then I'm like, you bitch, you turned it around. And now
she turns it around. She turns it around. And makes your spouse, well, you're sad because your spouse is an asshole. So she had managed to, on every relationship all of us have had, to make our spouse, our boyfriend, our girlfriend, the bad guy. There's something wrong with them. They're evil. They don't love you. They're pieces of shit. So that's what we grew up with. So then you start to believe that. And you're like, well, no, they're not good enough. I'm not good enough for them. I'm not good enough for anybody. So we take those bits and pieces of love from whoever gives it, however fucking dysfunctional it is, and we try to piece that together to have some sort of, I don't know, relationship with people. And that's why I went through two marriages.
Yeah.
Crazy shit, man.
You know, that's why the conversation. I'll say, go ahead, Sam.
I just want to jump in here. You know, my feeling is that, I spend a lot of time talking about the dysfunctional people, my mother, my father, but I do want to talk about the what is possible. And, you know, I do feel that I have peace and I have the strength to maintain boundaries. And I'm learning about how to have a healthy relationship with people in general. Given the basic programming that I was given, you know, that's how I am going to operate the rest of my life, is based on that programming. Now, what I've found though, is that ACOA and other 12-step programs have given me the guidance, you know, the guideposts, those little reflectors on the side of the road that keep me in line. And, you know, my life is outstanding. You know, I've been married and going on 24 years. You know, that marital dysfunction has not hit me, thank God. I have a wonderful wife. We're both in 12-step recovery. And, you know, I do believe that in spite of everything, you know, being paralyzed and, you know, just all the shit that goes on, my life is still a parade of miracles. And, you know, the 12 steps have helped me. And, you know, my recovery journey now takes another step. You know, the work is never done for me.
Nope.
And, you know, So more will be revealed, you know, and it's being revealed. And so I feel like a beginner at 34 years of sobriety in the other 12-step program, you know, I'm coming into ACOA as a brand newcomer. Like, I don't know shit. I don't know anything. Teach me, you know, how am I supposed to navigate, you know, in this new reality, this new world? Mm-hmm. And I'm getting that. I'm getting guidance. You know, I read the Big Red Book, and it's like, how do they know? And I listen to the podcast, and they're wonderful because I hear people talking about the shit that happened to them, and then what they did, and then how is their life now? And, you know, no one has said, well, I'm so far so much worse than I was when I came to the show.
Right. Or I have it all figured out, though.
Yeah, people.
Yes, too.
People have it sorted out, or they're sorting it out. And, you know, there's a bit of joy, to be honest, in the discovery, you know, to have a new experience, you know, a deeper experience. You know, I went to the Mankind Project, and they talk about the little boy inside. And it's no different, I believe, than ACOA talking about the inner child. There is an inner Sammy in here, and he's probably 12 years old, and I get to be the adult, and I do get to parent him and take care of him, and that's lovely. It's wonderful.
Thanks, Sammy.
That's it.
Thanks, Sammy.
This is so amazing. There are a lot of people listening right now that are very jealous that you guys all have a relationship. Very grateful. This is so beautiful. You guys are really lucky that you have each other.
Yeah, we are blessed. We're blessed.
The four of us. To my mom's chagrin, it's the four of us, not the five of us.
That's right. I remember that conversation, or I remember the commitment that we couldn't rely on the parents any longer, so we had to make a pact to take care of each other. And we have. That's,
44 years ago.
Yeah.
Ish.
And I think what's really beautiful too is that, you know, as is the case, each sibling has their own unique experience, right. But I didn't at once hear anyone invalidating each other's experience. And, you know, you respect your own perspectives and, you know, impact and the way that you view things. And I think that's really, it's just great example.
Thanks.
It's really beautiful.
Thank you. We love each other, and we've been through hell and back, and we make it one day at a time. That's our motto. One day at a time, one second at a time. And we've got each other and a lot of other people out there willing to be there for us.
Yeah.
The grace of the program.
Yeah.
And I've also never heard, like, I like too that you're not like pushing things on each other as well.
Right.
Well, I think because we've been pushed, like we were pushed into Al-Anon, or what is it called?
Alateen.
And we would go to meetings and such like that, and pamphlets and this and that. And, you know, I think we each have to learn our own way, just like
anything. You know, the seeds were planted in Alateen.
Were planted.
To be true, you know, I don't regret going to Alateen.
Nope.
You know, I've been in a lot of therapy. My wife and I have been through relationship classes and parenting classes to learn how to reprogram our, you know, the ideas that we have on how to raise children. I haven't hit my children at all. I just shook my son up one time, but I can remember in that one time, and I felt so ashamed and so bad that that I lost my temper with him. I swore to myself that I'd never do it again. But it's taken a lot of years of classes and counseling to reprogram myself, and it's been effective. So, but it has taken some work, and mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of joy.
Some work, a lot of work.
A lot of work. Yeah. How much you get? Yeah, a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. Matt, were you going to say something?
Thank you. Yeah, just real quick. I mean, we've all had our own path. We all mm-hmm. started with nothing. Did any one of you guys get, you know, the golden friggin' ticket?
Oh, you didn't have the $1 million inheritance. I guess only I got it.
Oh, you got it. You're the one. Son of a bitch.
I got a blue duffel bag with red handles. Yay.
Yeah, I mean, it started basically with nothing. You know, when you look at some shit that people have to get started. Anyway, it's a sob story, but, you know, we started with nothing, and we've had this varied, you know, I was telling a friend, I'm like, it's like long, strange trip I've had or something like that. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, meandered around, and, you know, we've all bounced around, but, you know, in a positive direction for the most part. And, you know, it's not easy watching people, you know, the siblings struggle, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. Mm-hmm. everyone, you know, we all know, no inventory is taken, but it's like, you know, you're sitting here, you're like, fuck, man. You know, it's so hard to see people struggle. Sam got sick, you know, and the struggles that we've had in our lives. And it's like, fuck, man, it's just hard, you know. And but we come back together, and, you know, we've taken a picture of the four of us. Whenever we get together, we take a picture of the four of us.
Yeah.
And, you know, it goes back to like the 80s, man. So it's always pretty cool. Yeah. Except for that one that I was in Tucson. I looked like a fat tub of lard. I'm like, oh my God, I'm late. So maybe that was a good thing.
You and me both.
I think I was standing in a hole. I'm a foot shorter than you all. Yeah, we were all just together a month ago. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
I think that's a Grateful Dead lyric. What a long, strange trip it's
that's
been.
That's it. Yeah.
Fucking like the doodah man. Everyone knows the doodah man.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What's your perfect night? Is it curling up on the couch for a cozy, peaceful night in? Therapy can feel a bit like that, your comfort place where you replenish your energy. With BetterHelp, get matched with a therapist based on your needs entirely online. It's convenient and suited to your schedule. Find comfort this season with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.